time he starts to hear what sounds like someone entering the room. But see, this was a recognizable sound. It wasn't a stranger that he heard. Clearly, it was Lillian. He knew the way Lillian walked. He knew that sound all too well. But he knew that she had walked in and she was just standing there. So annoyingly, he turns over and he's face to face with what can only be described as an old hag with gray hair flowing down her face. And as she's sitting there, she's lipping something like she's trying to talk, and there's this horrid smell that's coming out of her mouth.
Welcome to Deceptive Reality.
Tonight we're going to an ordinary house on Detroit's West Side, Nick. Now, this story has all the makings. You know, we watch shows and movies like The Conjuring. We watch different Annabelle series, and they all have that little bit of a story. I'm giving you that today, just like one of those movies. And this is it's a known story, but long and short of it, we've got an old house, one bedroom that nobody wants to go into. We got a woman whose outfit matches clothing that's hanging in the closet of the family, or in the closet of the family's bedroom in there, and a family that leaves right in the middle of the night.
Oh, interesting.
It's like I say, it's got everything that we typically love in the movies. And you and I, we've got a little bit of time with investigations, so I think we can give a kind of different look at some of this than the average person just going into the story. Now, the strange part is that the Adams family, they told this story within days to the Detroit Free Press.
The Adams family.
Kinda. Slightly different names. They actually published this in November 4th of 1962, and a few months later, Fate magazine photographed the family inside that very house. So I do have photos of some of these things. We're going to put those up during the podcast so you guys can see them also. But basically, I want to take you to where this all started. It started on Martin Street, and a lot of people, they've heard this story in that area of the horrid hag. Do you know anything about this story, Nick?
Oh, the horrid hag. I don't, but this sounds exciting.
Well, about a year before the family fled, William and Lillian Adams rented the house with their five children. Now, Bill was 29. Mm-hmm. Lillian was 28, and their children, they ranged from 8 years old down to 1 year old, and that's Jimmy down to Tammy.
Okay.
So Bill was working the midnight shift at a Cadillac plant. He would leave home at kind of odd hours, and then he came back when the children would begin their day. So anyone that has children inside the home, you know, if you're trying to go to bed and you're trying to get some sleep and they're a little rambunctious, it's kind of hard to find a good night's, well, a good day sleep, I guess, in lack of better terms. So what would happen is, because the schedule was so difficult for him to sleep, there was a little bedroom that was on the back side of that house. So Bill would use that small bedroom to kind of get away from the noise, get away from the kids, and try to sleep through the day. Now, the house, it was old. It had some worn linoleum that was covering some wooden floors. There's going to be a reason that I'm explaining that. And the plaster on the walls, it was kind of beat up. So this house, though it did not look beautiful, it kind of looked like the typical haunted house.
Okay.
The family just cared that, hey, this is some place that we live. This is what we need. And it was functional. Nobody was giving it a second look. Now, the back bedroom is sat just beyond the kitchen. And there was like a little utility area. This house wasn't real big. It's kind of small. Now, there was this extremely heavy basement door that would go down into almost like a cellar area. There was like some steps that was kind of weird there. It just wasn't necessarily by today's standards what we would assume is a perfectly built house for someone to live in. But the bedroom was small. It had room basically for a bed. It had that built-in closet, and there wasn't much else to it. That was basically it. Up in that bedroom, though, there was a high window. So it wasn't the typical entry level. It was a little bit high up onto the wall, which was kind of good for Bill because the way that it would work is it'd be high enough to where the light wouldn't necessarily hit him. So it was kind of a good place for Bill to go in there and sleep through the day. Well, until the nightmare started.
Oh.
Yeah, got your attention with that a little bit, didn't I?
Yeah, I had wondered if this was the room that no one wanted to stay in and if this is the precursor to it.
You're about to see, Nick. So during the summer of 1962, Bill began waking up in that back bedroom screaming until his throat would hurt, like literally the most horrific nightmares that anybody could have. Now, those dreams, they were different than anything that he'd ever experienced before. So, you know, I think all of us from time to time can have kind of a nightmare and you go, holy crap, you wake up and you're like, wow, this was on a different level, he said.
Yeah, repeated too. That's kind of odd.
Correct. They were happening on a relatively ongoing basis. Now, one nightmare, it kind of kept coming back over and over and over again. And what it would be is Bill would open a door in his dream, or in, I guess in this case, a nightmare, and a mutilated body would fall out towards him, like coming towards him. And right as that would happen, he would kind of shake out of it. He would scream and then he would wake up, and that's where the screaming would come from. So the dreams were getting so bad that he told Lillian, hey, listen, I don't know what I'm going to do. I might need to see like a therapist or, you know, possibly a psychiatrist. Like they were that bad.
Oh, that's pretty bad if you're thinking about that. That's I've had horrific. A lot of nightmares and I've never really gotten to that stage before.
The only time that I've had experiences that bad, I did a small stint with HGH when I was bodybuilding.
Right.
And the nightmares were so bad and they were so realistic that I'm like, I cannot keep taking this because I will legit have a heart attack in my dream.
Right. You're almost having sleep paralysis every night without the break in between almost.
Exactly. So Bill started thinking to himself, you know, I never really had these nightmares until I started sleeping in this bedroom. I bet there's something maybe with this bedroom, but he didn't piece it together like it was paranormal. He just thought maybe it was the setting. It couldn't be, you know, anything other than that. But the weird thing is when he would sleep somewhere else in the house, like let's say he didn't want to go to the bedroom. Never had those dreams, never had those nightmares at all.
No, perfectly fine. That's suspicious.
Every single time he'd go back to the room, the nightmare would happen again. So in his mind, he's like, there's got to be something to this. I don't know what it is. The family also started noticing that it's almost like the rest of the house had a way of sensing that maybe there was something in that room. So by that, what I mean is, let's say you're in the kitchen that was relatively close to this bedroom. Mm-hmm. It's almost like the kitchen would start to feel a little different when the bedroom was feeling really different.
Okay, like maybe a cold spreading, like a cold chill, or?
I think it's more of like a gut feeling.
Okay, intuition.
Kind of like an intuition thing, right? Okay. So, in addition to that, the family had these dogs, these little terriers.
I was going to ask how animals behave towards this.
Scared to death of the room, wanted nothing to do with it. So they would walk up to the door, nope their way out, and walk away. They wanted nothing to do with it. Now, interestingly enough, I talked about the children and their ages. They also refused to play anywhere near that bedroom.
Oh, so they sort of had that feeling too.
There was something about the bedroom they didn't like, and they're like, nope.
Now, you know what's interesting about that?
What's that?
That would be total against the nature of kids because they know that when their dad's sleeping in there, they're supposed to stay away. And that's going to definitely be where kids want to be. So even if they've got a feeling
there's
they don't
want
to go around there, that's some there is something to it.
For sure. You know, and I think the case is if it was just Bill having these nightmares, and even if it was a case where maybe the dogs was acting a little bit weird, maybe you could say, maybe it's just the room doesn't feel quite right. But when you start adding everything to the equation, Bill, the terriers, the kids, like everything, you kind of lean back and go, I don't know about that. There's got to be something to it. August of 1962. Bill's grandmother, she was traveling north from Georgia and she just wanted to come up and visit. She's like, hey, do you mind if I come up and, you know, maybe we can hang out. Maybe we can do some stuff. We haven't really been around each other for a while. They told her, they said, yeah, you know, come on in. Hey, but when you stay, we're going to have you stay in that back bedroom.
We're going to put you in the haunted room. You'll love it.
They didn't say anything about that, surprisingly. They didn't tell her about Bill's nightmares. Didn't talk about the dogs not wanting to go in there. Didn't talk about the kids not wanting to go in there. They're just like, hey, stay on over. You know, we got a special bedroom for you.
Right. Well, it's a small house. They ain't got much choice anyway.
They don't have much choice. But if you're Bill's grandma, do you think if someone's like, hey, we're going to put you in the haunted room, you might want to know that before you come down? You think that's possible?
I guess they just wouldn't sell it that way. I wouldn't.
Well, according to Bill, his grandmother lasted all of one night in that bedroom and was like, nope.
Oh, wow.
So by breakfast, they was all sitting around. She said, you know, something tried to get into my room last night. It's trying to get into the bedroom. And they said, What do you mean it's trying to get into the bedroom? She said, I heard the door. I heard the attempt for someone. Was y'all trying to get into the room? And they're like, no. She said, well, I also heard sounds through the entire night. Like it was very weird sounds. And she said, there's no way that I was asleep in there. I was wide awake. They said, well, Grandma, we don't know what it is. And she goes, well, here's what I'll tell you is I'm heading back to Georgia tonight. I'm not waiting.
Oh, wow. It must have really troubled her.
So she said that it was so disturbing to her. She couldn't spend another night in that bedroom. She packed all her stuff back up and left that very afternoon to get back to Georgia from Michigan. Now, if you're looking, Michigan to Georgia, that's a hefty trip. That's probably 10 to 12 hours.
Oh, she's not messing around then.
Not messing around. Grandma was like, nope, I'm out. So when you think about it, and I'm just trying to do this from a number standpoint, you got Bill that's having these weird nightmares. The dogs that's not going anywhere near it. You got children that won't play. And now grandma's like, nope, something's trying to bust into my room. I'm good.
Yeah, she'll risk a 12-hour trip over it.
Correct. But the moral of the story is, it's just kind of weird that all these things would kind of happen. Now, the Adams family, they stayed in the house through September and most of October. They worked around that room as though it was just part of their everyday life. They didn't think too hard about it. And then a man named Shirley Patterson, well, he came to Detroit. Now, you're probably going to say, well, who's Shirley Patterson? Well, he was a 27-year-old man from Georgia. He was married to one of Bill's cousins, and he drove also up from Georgia because he was picking up a brand new car. And he said, hey, guys, remember me? Good old Shirley Patterson. I'm married to your cousin. And Bill's like, oh, that cousin. I like that cousin. He said, hey, I'm picking up this car in Michigan. Do you care if I stay with you? Well, guess what they said?
Oh, we got just the room for you. We got
just the room for you. So they said, yeah, we got a spare bedroom. You can stay with us. So he got there.
Ain't that creepy one you put grandma in, is it?
Apparently he didn't talk to grandma.
Okay.
So he got there Saturday, October 27th of 1962. Now, Bill and Lillian, they said that you could have the back room. Don't worry about it. It's completely free and clear. He said, hey, you know, I'm only going to need to stay there for 2 or 3 days. Not necessarily a big deal. I'm just going to pick up the car and visit a little bit. These families wants to visit with them there, which I think is amazing. Probably amazing enough that you should tell them what room they would be renting. But again, they didn't say anything about Bill's nightmares. They didn't say anything about the terriers, the kids, or now even grandma. They didn't say anything about any of those things, Nick.
These people are neglectful.
Yeah, probably something I would have brought up to old Shirley. So. At about 11:30 at night, Bill left to work. He worked for that automotive manufacturing plant. And Lillian, she was washing her hair, getting ready for bed. She was in the bathroom and she was kind of fixing it up before she went to bed. And Shirley, He turned off the bedroom ceiling light. And he said, you know what? I'm going to go to bed. It's 11:30. I'll get up tomorrow, hang out with them for a little bit. We'll maybe get that car and we'll just keep moving. So he ends up laying down and he was facing the wall, which behind him, this is another small little room. Remember, there's a doorway on the other side. So he's laying there and a little bit of time went by and Shirley said that he was pretty sure he hadn't fallen asleep yet. Like he was still kind of awake, still trying to figure it out. He said, all of a sudden, in his bed, he felt as though something turned him around in his own bed. He didn't do it. Something else turned him from the wall towards the doorway. And when he opened his eyes to look towards the door, he saw a woman standing outside the bedroom with her back towards him.
Oh, okay.
She said that it was constantly looking towards the kitchen. Now, at first, he was like, well, clearly that's Lillian. Like, that's the only woman in the house. It's clearly a woman. But he said he thought it was weird because what he was noticing was it had longer hair than what Lillian would have had. So he's sitting there and he's trying to adjust his eyes, trying to see what he thinks is probably Lillian. He said he saw a short fur coat. And underneath that fur coat was a blue dress. Now, he said he started to shake a little bit, but he kind of wanted to see her face. He wanted to know who was this woman. It has to be Lillian. It's the only female in the house. But he said something happened to him that he had never experienced before. He said as he laid there, it almost felt like he came out of his body and was able to stand up and walk towards the door where this whatever woman was at. But the weird thing is, he knew his body was still back there on the bed.
Well, that's got to be a little disconcerting.
A little disconcerting, but he said he was so curious by this woman. He said that whatever this was, some people would say out of body experience, he walks up to the woman and he's trying to walk around her to see her face. But every time he'd get to the points to see her, it'd be the back of her head. So he would never be able to see the front of her face ever. So he's trying to figure out, like, how's this even possible? He said that basically she spoke without even turning around. And it was one of those things that startled him so bad. But he believed that she asked him why he was standing there in his shorts. Now, an interesting thing is, for him to lay down, he would typically lay down naked. But since he was at someone else's house, he had his shorts on. And he said he almost felt like this woman was like, why are you in these shorts? Almost as though this is my spot. Why are you doing this in my spot? So he said it scared him so bad that he almost shook himself awake. And when he woke himself up, he started running. He ran right past where she was into the front room. And as he was passing room to room to room, the lights was flickering off as he went until the entire house went black.
Oh, wow.
So again, just like every cinematic horror movie that's ever out there, the lights always go off. This is a case where someone said that exact thing happened.
Man, I can picture all of this as a movie.
Oh, this literally
is escalating perfectly.
This could be the perfect movie. So he's screaming, he's running through the house. And as he kind of gets around, he starts noticing that he's hearing someone on the other side, and it's Lillian, and she's running from the other side of the house. She wasn't even on the side where he was. So now he knows point blank, this is not Lillian.
Right.
This is clearly something else. I don't know what it was. So he's sitting there and he's trying to explain to her what's going on. He's like, hey, this is what I experienced. Right as he gets to the end of explaining everything to her, they both start hearing what could best be described as like a wailing. It sounded like it was part human, but also part animal.
Oh. This has got layers.
Very much so. There was also this nasty odor that was drifting from that room, and it was so bad that it was making them sick to their stomach. Now, Shirley and Lillian, they stood there in the kitchen when all of a sudden they felt almost like something beneath their feet moving. And as they stood there, they saw that heavy basement door lift up into the air and then slam back down.
Ooh, I got the chills thinking about this.
Kind of spooky. The only thing they could think in the moment, there was a woman in the house with a fur coat and a blue dress. All the lights went out. As they're standing there in the kitchen, they saw the basement door go up and back down. Clearly, it's an intruder in the house. They called the police, and the police came out. And as the police would search the entire house, including the attic and the basement that we talked about, they found absolutely no one or nothing that could explain what happened. The woman was completely gone. All the sounds in the house had stopped. And the basement door was exactly back where it belonged and showed no indications of ever being open.
Wow.
Now, if you would have had this moment, Nick, now I want to take you back and I want to ask you, let's say, for example, you're Shirley.
Right.
Would you not ask at some point in time, hey, folks, y'all ever seen anything weird in this room?
He made a lot of decisions that I wouldn't have made. But yeah, I would definitely ask that. And just to go back, I am never sleeping in a strange place facing the wall.
I'm facing
where things are going to come.
Exactly.
This guy is, until this night, fear-free.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Yeah, but I'd be like, what's going on here? Like, I wouldn't assume that this is the first time this has ever happened.
But think about how wild of a story this is. Like, you wouldn't assume that just because you came there and you've never had anything paranormal ever happen, that just out of nowhere, this event, this is the one time it happens and it just happens when you're there.
Absolutely not. That's just what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I would be like, what's up? Did you know about this?
How would you feel if they would have told you about old grandma and what Bill had happening?
I would have been like, I can't believe you did that to grandma, number one.
Yeah.
You know she's getting up in years. You can't be doing that to her. You can't be putting her in haunted houses.
You damn near killed me.
And if that weren't bad enough, you didn't even tell me. I was sleeping facing the wall. I felt like a baby in a cradle.
I would have been ticked. I would have absolutely been ticked off.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be excited for the experience, but I could have got a little heads up there.
I think you'd be ready for it if you knew it was coming. If you didn't have it, like, you feel like you're in a safe place. This is family.
Yeah.
And just have this happen out of nowhere, I think I'd be ticked. Now, this might shock you. Shirley and Lillian, they stayed up the rest of the night. They decided they didn't need sleep the rest of the night. They waited till Bill got home.
Oh, I don't know how shocking that is, but yeah, okay.
So Bill gets home from the Cadillac plant on Sunday morning, and Shirley and Lillian, they told him everything, literally everything that happened through the night, the facts that the cops came, cops couldn't find anyone. They told him about the woman in the doorway and all the lights flying out and that very weird wailing noise that they heard. They also talked about the disgusting smell that permeated through the entire house. Lastly, they explained, to finish it all off, the basement door came up and it slammed back closed. Now, Bill, he kind of had a choice to make. Now, he knew this bedroom and he'd had some nightmares. He didn't see anything crazy like that. Now, either he and his family could leave. They could do what I think a lot of families would probably do. Or maybe he would just go in there by himself and face whatever this is and try to figure out for himself, is this something, like, he's just assuming, I go in there, I go to sleep, and then I have these nightmares. Maybe I'll stay awake and try to figure out what this is.
What I was thinking about, this is his own house. He probably was tired. In your own house, you fall asleep a lot quicker than you do at other places.
Absolutely.
So things could have been going on. He just didn't know.
Oh, guaranteed. Guaranteed. So Bill decides, you know what? Y'all are a bunch of chickens. I'm going to go in there. I'm going to figure out what's going to happen. And we'll try to figure it out. Maybe it's just some weird illusion. He decides that he waits until Sunday evening. He stays awake all the way to Sunday evening, 7:30. And he says, listen, I'm going to go in that room. I'm going to lay down. I'm going to turn the lamps off. I'm going to stay awake. I'm not going to go to sleep. And I'm going to figure out whatever this is. I want you guys to stay in the front room. So Shirley, you and Lillian, you stay in here in the front room. I want you to only have one table lamp on. I've got this little weak gray light that comes through the high bedroom window. It's not going to affect very much. And before too long, it's going to get kind of dark anyway. So he goes in there, leaves the door wide open. And he lays down and he stays awake. And all he does is just listens. Now, for a long time, nothing happened. He was just laying in there to himself, just kind of like, man, this isn't anything. And then after a little bit of time, he starts to hear what sounds like someone entering the room. But see, this was a recognizable sound. It wasn't a stranger that he heard. Clearly, it was Lillian. He knew the way Lillian walked. He knew that sound all too well. But now he's getting a little bit annoyed. I already told you guys what my game plan is. I'm going to go in here. I'm going to try to figure out what this is. Why is my wife coming in here screwing this up? So as he's sitting there, he's waiting to see if maybe she just walked in, walked back out. But he knew that she had walked in and she was just standing there. So annoyingly, he turns over and he's face to face with what can only be described as an old hag with gray hair flowing down her face.
Oh.
And he said, as he's standing there, it's staring almost right past him. It's not like it's even looking at him. It's like it's going right, looking right past him with these old eyes. It almost looks like it's got cataracts over it. And as she's sitting there, she's lipping something like she's trying to talk. And there's this horrid smell that's coming out of her mouth. Now, Bill is completely perplexed by this entire thing. He doesn't even understand. How can I even explain this? He said the sound that came out of her mouth instead of words almost sounded like a hiss.
Oh.
And with that same nasty smell that Shirley and Lillian had talked about, he was like, nope, I'm out. Jumps off the bed, screaming, and runs into the front room. Now, he's so scared from this because we're literally talking face to face. This thing was right in front of his face. Because it was so scary to him, he's got his hands ripping at his hair, and they're seeing him as he's screaming through the house. They're trying to grab him and tackle him and trying to stop him from hurting himself. He won't stop. Like, he's literally having like a mental breakdown. Shirley ends up grabbing a blanket, wrapping him up in the blanket, and holding him down until he would stop.
That's wild. That must have been horrifying.
They forced him into a chair. The thing they noticed was that smell was now permeating from that bedroom again and now wafting through the rest of the house. Almost exactly like the last time. Now, Bill went into that bedroom. He believed that he'd be able to handle whatever was in that bedroom. He'd be able to explain it away. But he came out in a condition that no one had ever seen him in before. And that's extremely alarming because, again, this was his house. He had been in that bedroom numerous times. Now, what I find interesting is Shirley saw that woman from behind, but she never showed her face.
Right.
He described the long hair, the short fur coat, the blue dress. But he, you know, from him, it's like, I don't understand. Now, Bill, interestingly enough, he only saw the face. He didn't see the body.
Didn't see the clothing or anything like that.
Didn't see the clothing. Didn't see any of that stuff. He never mentioned her, the rest of her body at all. Now, when Bill calmed down, Shirley and Lillian, they was kind of talking about the experience. The one thing Shirley never told Lillian is what that woman was wearing. And he goes, it was so odd because it was a fur coat and a blue dress. Lillian says, wait a second. I own a short fur coat and I own a blue dress that's in that closet in that bedroom. They walk into the bedroom. She goes to the closet. She grabs it, brings it out, and it's a perfect match to exactly what Shirley said he saw.
Man, I'm not thinking ghost at all at this stage. Like, they don't usually borrow clothing.
Well, what's kind of interesting is they end up looking through the clothing, but they're starting to notice something interesting about the clothing. Would you like to take a wild guess what it is?
It's got a stench.
It's got a horrid stench, just like what they were smelling permeating through the house. Now, that's the part of the story that kind of gets me going when I was doing research on this. You know, again, Shirley, he described the outfit before Lillian even showed him the clothes. He had no clue or concept what that clothing was. When he saw the woman, he thought it was Lillian. The very next night, Bill's in the room. He hears what he thinks is Lillian. The question I would ask is, and we've covered this a few times on the podcast before, we talk about mimics.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So a mimic will oftentimes use our voices against us.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's a fleeting look. The question I would ask is, do you think this could possibly be a mimic case where it was trying to use her own clothing to trick someone into believing it was her?
I hadn't thought of that, but it fits well because of some things you mentioned, like her voice, her clothing, but you also mentioned that the husband was super familiar with the movements and the sounds that his wife makes.
Yes.
It's almost like he's trying to learn how to become her.
Correct.
Which makes me wonder, what are the next steps of a mimic? Like, we don't know if there's an end game for these things.
You know, last September when we investigated the Wildwood, I have an audio where a mimic, what I believe was a mimic, imitated my voice calling my wife's name.
Interesting.
I never believed in mimics. Not that I didn't believe, but it just wasn't something that was on my forefront. Until we did that investigation, I heard that. And when I first heard it, I was like, well, that's odd. Like, I don't remember calling her name anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I started listening to the audio, we were in a different room talking.
Right.
So I'm like, the same time that I say her name, clearly near the microphone that's in the other room, she and I are in another room talking about you that was down in the kitchen.
Right. You know, I want to propose something spooky. I don't want to give anyone a mental complex here or anything.
Yep.
But imagine that you move into a home that's got a mimic in it.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, it chooses someone from your family. And it learns their mannerisms. It learns how they talk, how they dress, their sense of style. It practices night after night. It can clearly get into people's dreams and learn about them.
Exactly.
What if the end game of a mimic is they get rid of that person and they get to live life as them from now on?
Oh, you're talking like a doppelganger kind of deal.
Yeah, like they replace the person. They learn how to behave like that person to a degree that you might never notice, and you just end up living with the mimic.
Well, you know,
the rest of your life.
You know what they say about demons. What's the one thing that a demon has that they don't have? What's the one thing they want?
To live in the regular world.
They need a host body.
Right. But this might not even need a host body. Maybe it just turns itself into the body.
Could be. But think about it. It would never be able to completely fool you unless it was to take over the exact person it was trying to imitate.
Well, I suppose. Yeah, I suppose so.
Right? Like, remember that movie of the reptilians where it ripped away the skin and there's a reptile underneath?
Yeah.
If we knew they were reptiles, they would have never succeeded in that movie either, right? It's kind of the same concept.
Yeah, that's true. It's interesting to think that that could happen.
Yeah. It's kind of a freaky situation.
Yeah.
Well, about an hour after Bill ran from that bedroom, that entire house was empty. Bill and Lillian, they grabbed the kids and they went over to the neighbor's house. They left all their furniture, most of their belongings behind. In fact, when they looked at pictures later, there was a cake that was sitting on top of the counter with one piece that was cut out. They left that behind. Dishes in the sink. The beds were a mess. It was literally a quick escape. Bill was like, I'm not going back into the house. If I go back into the house, it's going to be with other people and it's not going to be at nighttime. I can promise you it's not.
Yeah.
So the house, it still looked like there was a family there, but there was no family. Now, Lillian, she cried through the entire rest of that night. And the next morning, the family went to her parents' house, which was in Dearborn, Michigan. And Bill said that he kept thinking about that bedroom door. And he said that if that bedroom door would have been closed, there's no doubt in his mind that he would have ran through the door without even trying to open it. Mm. It's like that comedian. Remember when he said, the door gave birth to him? Literally, yeah. That's what would have happened with Bill. So their clothes, their furniture, all the children's belongings, it was still in the house. During the next week, Bill returned during the daylight with friends and with family. He would never go by himself. Within a week, they moved all the furniture, all of Bill's stuff inside the house, the family stuff, the kid stuff was all completely out. Now, that should have been the end of the Adams family connection with the back bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one person that decided, and my family, they've talking about this situation. That's kind of foolish. Like, I don't really think anything like that happens. Like, a little bit of curiosity happens. Mm. And that was Lillian's brother who decided he wanted to find out for himself.
Oh, okay. What's his name?
So his name is Leo. Kind of like the lion.
Brave Leo. That's Leo, right. The brave lion.
So Lillian's sister, Virginia, and brother Leo, they decided one night, you know what? We're going to go into that house. It's completely empty. There's nothing in there now. Man, our sister said they had this experience, but that's for the movies. Okay.
Right.
So Virginia was like, listen, don't know if I believe it, but I'm going to stay in this kitchen. Okay. Leo was like, it's fine. I'm going to go back to that back bedroom. And I'm just going to lay down on that bed for 10 minutes. For 10 minutes, right?
Right.
I don't think there's anything there. So he goes in there and he leaves the door open. And, well, there's that bed that they was talking about. I'm just going to lay in it. So he gets in. You can kind of hear the mattress squeaking a little bit as he goes over and he's laying there. And a few minutes goes by. Now, Virginia, she starts hearing a groan coming from the room. She was like, I don't think that's Leo. Like, that's kind of a weird noise. I mean, she knew his voice clearly and all the sounds. You know, when you're growing up with someone, you kind of learn all their mannerisms.
Oh, yeah.
All of a sudden, Leo runs into the kitchen with this expression that she had never seen in her entire life. And he's like, we got to go right now. And she's like, well, what is it? He's like, we don't have time to talk, woman. We need to go.
So maybe not brave Leo.
Leo would not tell her or the rest of the family what happened inside that bedroom. The family said he had slept on the floor in the front room after that for a while. And he was constantly would wake up shaking and in fear.
Wow.
So he had gone into that room for just a few minutes. He basically said 10 minutes. He came out terrified and decided that whatever happened inside that room and he was keeping to himself, he was never going to tell anyone. And he never did.
Never did. What could possibly be that horrible?
Well, it was bad enough that when he told the family that something happened, they send the police back over again.
Mm.
Police searched the house two or more times after. They found no person hiding in the rooms. Nothing beneath the floor, nothing in the basement. But you see, like with all good horror stories, people move out in the middle of the night, and all of a sudden they kind of word gets around a little bit. So on Sunday, November 4th of 1962, the Detroit Free Press, they published a story under the headline, "A Horrid Hag Hisses." Now, that was about a week after Shirley and Bill went into that bedroom and had that experience. Now, once the story got out, of course, people, they start traveling from all over the place to see this little house. We've seen that numerous times. Lindley Street haunting.
Yeah.
You know, people call that the Bridgecrest poltergeist story. You've got Enfield poltergeist story, kind of the same deal. Like everyone flocks to those houses to try to get a glimpse of whatever it is for themselves. And strangers, they start asking for permission. They was like, "Hey, we want to stay all night. We want to stay in that room." Like everyone's talking about this haunting. It sounds fun. We want to hang out. Well, the landlord's like, "Listen, I don't know what's going on there, but no. Absolutely. Yeah, this is a
liability.
I don't want anything to do with this. This is weird." But because things was happening, there was engineers that was over at that automotive research facility that was nearby. And they're like, "Hey, if there's some inside that house, we got things that might be able to capture it. We can put lasers inside that room and see if it goes off. And we might be able to detect if there's something there." Landlord's like, "Absolutely not. Like, I don't want anything to do with it. Whatever's there can stay there. I'm good." Well, because it was one of those situations where the news gets out, of course, you know, you go from those small publications to bigger publications. February of 1963, a writer, Cornelius Sheehan, published a longer account in Fate magazine. Now it was called
Fate magazine comes back into the picture.
Back into the picture, 100%. Now, their story was called "There's a Ghost in Detroit." Now, the magazine included photos of Bill, Lillian, Shirley, the house, and the bedroom. And one photograph showed Bill and Shirley standing right beside the bed that all of this happened. Now, again, I'm going to be showing some photos of some of the things and some of the articles that's happening within this. Now, another one showed Lillian holding the exact fur coat and blue dress that had been seen in all of these stories. With the help of the magazine and those photos, that story, it kind of just exploded. And then it was known as the woman inside the room kind of got her own personality. She was called the Horrid Hag of Martin Street. And that's how she'd be referred by many for pretty much years to go. Now,
right.
One woman contacted the Free Press and said her grandmother lived in that house for 68 years until she passed away about 10 years before the Adams family got there. But she said the description did not fit her grandma. Her grandmother was a very sweet woman in real life, but that was the only death that had occurred inside that house before that family moved in. And she lived there 68 years before that with nothing, no occurrences, nothing that happened. But she did pass away 10 years before the family got there. But again, none of the rest of the stuff fit.
Or.
Oh, here we go. Or I'm ready for it.
Or. You said grandmother, was it?
Correct.
Or her grandmother moved in there. And then a mimic lived in her place.
Yeah.
For years and years.
I do like that theory.
Yeah.
That might be it. You know, interestingly, though, when you think about this, the thing that I find weird is that back bedroom never gave the same experience to any two people.
That is interesting. I did think about that too.
Yeah, because it's like typically when someone says, "Hey, I had this experience," if someone else has something, it's generally a similarity of that same experience. What do they call that? Long and short of it, they just have a very similar experience.
Yeah.
But you got Bill that had the nightmares at first. Then grandma comes. Grandma's like, nope. She noped out of it in one night. The terriers that wouldn't go in. The kids that had no interest in going into the bedroom. Then you have, unfortunately, Shirley that comes in. Shirley has his experience. Lillian has her own experience. She's never even seen the woman like at all.
Right.
All she did was heard the sounds and that basement door that came up and back down. They also had that weird smell. They did all have that weird, horrid, nasty smell that was happening. But I don't know. I find it kind of odd that no one had the same exact experience in that same house.
Right. I'm still kind of wondering what the dream was about, the recurring dream about opening a door.
And a mutilated body, yeah.
Right. Was that a victim of the mimic that they had taken over in the past?
Could be. Could very well be. It's kind of a weird
thing. I'm weaving my own story behind the scenes here, I think.
I think for me, it's almost like the room gave each person a little piece of a puzzle.
Mm.
And it's almost like it was trying to say, hey, try to solve this puzzle with what I give you. It's not going to give them all the same thing, because you get too many people to see the same thing or hear the same thing or smell the same thing or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. That might be kind of what gives away the true purpose.
Yeah. The cellar too. I'm wondering about that, because that only came up once as well.
Correct. Well, the Adams family, they moved into that little house because it basically gave the seven in that family a home. Bill used that back bedroom because he needed a quiet place to sleep. And obviously he needed it the worst, because it was the night shift that he was working with the kids at home. He needed that little bit of peace. But within a year, that room, it became one place that no one ever wanted to be in. No one ever learned who the woman was. The question that I would ask everybody out there is, do you think the hag was a ghost that was trapped in that back room? Or perhaps it was something that kind of started to learn who the Adam family was, and maybe wanted them to believe that she was something that she wasn't. What I'd like to do is have you tell me in the comments down below what you believe this truly was. Do you think it was a case of a mimic? Do you think that maybe it was the beginning of maybe what some people would consider an oppressive situation, maybe a demonic possession? But the only thing I would ask is, if you enjoyed spooky stories like this, please be sure to give a thumbs up on any of the platforms you currently listen to or on the YouTube machine. Subscribe and stay with us here on Deceptive Reality. We would definitely appreciate that. Nick, before we sign off, what do you think all of this was? Are you going to lean into the mimic?
This is a creature that came into us, into our reality, through the dream world of the husband sleeping in there. And once it entered our reality, it decided it wanted to replace a member of the family and was slowly working towards that goal.
Ooh. You know what kind of reality we call that, don't you?
Deceptive reality.
Until we see you in the next episode. Goodbye.
Hey, we couldn't plan an exit like that.